This is the National Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Ari Shapiro, and each night we're here to answer your questions.
Hi, my name's Lo.
My name's Phil Orleski.
My name is Aaron Olszewski.
I'm Andrew McBride from Bellingham, Washington.
Well, my question is about ventilators.
And I want to know,
I was wondering,
and my question
is there a possibility this pandemic will continue beyond 2020?
Is there anyone compiling a lessons learned report?
Can surgical masks be sterilized and reused?
Is there any way using a CPAP could be useful when a ventilator is not available?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have NPR journalists and outside experts here to offer solid facts and correct some of the misinformation that is floating around. And today we've got answers about the latest efforts in the U.S. to stop the virus, how you should handle the new instruction to cover your face in public, and how ventilators fit into the medical treatment for this disease. Send us your questions about all these topics and more at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, use the hashtag NPRConversation. Each night, we begin the national conversation by answering the question, what happened today? Well, now more than 10,000 people in the U.S. have died of this disease, and there are more than 360,000 confirmed cases in the country. In New York, hospitalizations, infections, and deaths continue, but may show a slight flattening of the curve. 600 people died in New York yesterday. Governor Andrew Cuomo says the city may have reached a plateau, but the healthcare system is stretched to the max.
Staying at this level is problematic. And if we are plateauing, it's because social distancing is working.
California, Oregon, and Washington State are shipping ventilators to New York to help. The morgue in New York City is filling up. Officials there are exploring using a city park for temporary burials. Here in Washington, D.C., President Trump bristled at criticism and tried to paint an upbeat picture.
Let's win this and let's get our country open as soon as we can. I think it's going to be sooner than people think. Things are going really well. Again, light at the end of the tunnel.
Washington, D.C.'s Mayor Muriel Bowser warns that the nation's capital could be one of the next hotspots.
If we aren't strict in our social distancing, the community spread will continue, and we will have more people succumb to illness and perhaps death.
South Carolina issued a stay-at-home order tonight. In Wisconsin, Governor Tony Evers issued an executive order to postpone all in-person voting tomorrow, but the state Supreme Court overruled it and ordered the election to go forward tomorrow. In Britain, Prime Minister Boris Johnson was transferred to intensive care after his symptoms from the virus worsened. He has handed off power to the foreign secretary. Last night, before the prime minister entered the ICU, the Queen of England rallied her nation.
We should take comfort that while we may have more still to endure, better days will return. We will be with our friends again. We will be with our families again. We will meet again.
Well, NPR's Aisha Roscoe is here to answer your questions about the White House response to the pandemic. Welcome back, Aisha.
Thanks for having me.
It was a long briefing tonight, and after the president left, the medical experts at the White House expressed some optimism. Tell us about that.
Yes, so it didn't happen until close to the end of the second hour of the briefing, but Dr. Anthony Fauci pointed to numbers that Governor Cuomo had mentioned, the plateau in hospitalizations, ICU admissions, and he said those are the kind of good signs that you look for. Fauci said it shows that we need to keep up the social distancing. And Dr. Deborah Birx said if we keep it up, there is potential that there will be fewer deaths than the government projected last week. But she listed more than 10 metro areas that continue to be concerning. So even with the kind of the optimism, there's still a lot of caution coming from both Birx and Fauci about what happens next.
So the sacrifices people have been making do seem to be having a positive impact. Now, earlier in the briefing, President Trump had some very tense exchanges with reporters over the number of tests that have been administrated, that have been given out. What did the White House say was the reason for the lack of testing?
So, yeah, President Trump was angry about a new Inspector General report that was a snapshot of what conditions were like for hospitals in mid to late March. And the president has been and continues to be super defensive when it comes to criticism about his administration's response to the pandemic. But task force officials did acknowledge today that things were backed up at that point. They say, though, that things have improved, and that is true, both on testing and supplies. But while testing has expanded, there are still reports of problems on the ground.
All right. We have a lot of questions coming in. Here's one from a listener in Oregon.
Hi. My name's Phil Orleski, and I want to know, it's known that President Trump disbanded a federal office that was in charge of long-term planning for pandemics. Has there been any analysis of what impact this has had or may have had on our current situation? Also, is there anyone compiling a lessons learned report that will help us prepare for the next?
That question looking backwards and forwards. Aisha, what can you tell us?
So regarding that office, it's not really clear. There has been a lot of controversy about this former federal office. Some former Trump administration officials say that the expertise was not lost when that office was disbanded. But Dr. Fauci did say, earlier that it would have been nice if it was still around. In terms of lessons learned, there have been some calls for review after this is over. And agencies like FEMA usually do what's known as an after action report when any type of big event like this happens. So that may be coming down the pike. Democrats in Congress have created a select committee, but it's more looking at how aid money is spent than necessarily investigating what led up to this. So right now, it doesn't look like there is a specific plan for a commission or anything like that that could change.
All right. NPR White House reporter Aisha Roscoe, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And NPR science correspondent John Hamilton is also on the line with us now. Hi, John.
Hi.
To return to that issue of testing, the White House says there are 125,000 coronavirus tests being done each day. When you talk with public health experts about what they would like to see, how do the numbers compare?
Well, I don't think they have like a magic number of the right number of tests. But, there are a couple of ways you can tell when the number of tests is catching up with the number of cases you have. And one indicator is whether people who have symptoms that could be coronavirus, whether these people are still having trouble getting tested. And if you look at the U.S., this seems to vary a lot by where you live. So you have some areas, labs actually have the capacity to test more people than they're being asked to. But you have other areas where even people with pretty bad symptoms are saying it's still hard to get a test. So another indicator is how many tests are coming back positive. Right now, I think nationally about 15% of people who get tested are found to actually be infected. And the public health community is saying, yeah, that probably means you need to be testing a bit more widely than we are right now. Hmm. And even more concerning, you'd like to see the percentage of positive tests come down over time as we do in more tests, more and more tests. And we haven't seen that happen yet.
Okay, well, we have a lot of questions from listeners about how long people can spread this disease. Let's listen to this one.
I'm Lauren. As I understand it, if someone is infected with COVID-19, they will either become sick in 14 days or will become a silent spreader. If someone is a silent spreader, how long will they be contagious for?
We've heard a lot about the fear that asymptomatic people will spread this disease. How long can they do that?
Right. I mean, there's not a great answer to that question yet. I should say it is clear that most people who get infected are not what you would call a silent spreader. It's not a common thing. Mm-hmm. And there's really strong evidence that it's people who do have symptoms who are most likely to infect other people. And even more recently, we found that, people can be contagious before they develop symptoms. So, in fact, they aren't truly asymptomatic or so-called silent spreaders. That said, there are people who seem to never get sick but do seem to be able to infect other people for some period of time, and we just don't know how long that is. The All right. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says people seem to stop being contagious within a couple of 3 days after their fever goes away. So it seems unlikely that other people are contagious for, say, weeks or months, but we just don't know.
So much that we still don't know about this disease. We have this question here from Charles in Georgia asking, does the virus travel in blood? Is it immune to iodine? Explain why iodine would be relevant here.
Well, I mean, iodine has been used in the medical world for a long time to kill viruses and anything else. It's often betadine. You put it on your skin before they're going to give you a shot to kill off any pathogens that are there. So iodine is really good at killing just about any virus on your skin or your surface, but I don't think I would drink it.
Let's take this question next about how long the pandemic might last.
I'm Andrew McBride from Bellingham, Washington. I've read that the 1918 pandemic lasted from January 1918 to December 1920, and that there were waves of infections. Is there a possibility this pandemic will continue beyond 2020?
Of course, everybody's hoping for a vaccine or a good treatment. If that doesn't come along, is it possible, John, that this could continue for more than a year?
I think everybody in the public health community believes that, yes, it's entirely possibly it could continue for more than a year. And already you have the public health community planning for that possibility. You know, if you look at other pandemics, you often see that they go in waves. It's not just a one and done kind of thing. So it's quite possible that what we're seeing now is a first wave that might pass, but there might be a second or a third one, something that could hit us later this year or next year. And of course, one of the places I think people really are looking closely at is China, where we first saw this outbreak. And the question there is, right. Are they going to see a second wave? What's going to happen? That will probably give us a better idea of what's happened to us.
A somber note to end this part of the conversation on NPR Science correspondent John Hamilton. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And you can hear much more of our extensive coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for a curated stream of stories. And if you have questions we want to help, go to npr.org/nationalconversation or reach us on Twitter with the hashtag NPRConversation. Up next, you have a lot of questions about masks. We've got answers right after this. You're listening to The National Conversation with All Things Considered from NPR News.